The president may be having second thoughts about next month's summit with North Korea's leader, apparently worried that the meeting he agreed to so quickly might turn out to be politically embarrassing now that North Korea has stepped up its demands. The New York Times reporting that the president has been questioning aides and allies about whether he should risk this historic meeting without any guarantees that North Korea would actually give up its entire nuclear arsenal.
It seems like only yesterday. Do you remember us? Do you remember when we were that young? Do you remember when we had that belief system that maybe this guy, maybe this reality TV star, maybe this guy that I'm pretty certain has to label his shoes left and right so that he knows what shoe goes on what foot? This guy is going to be the answer to the North Korean problem. My largest issue going into the North Korea deal, which has turned out to be the worst deal yet, my largest issue with this deal was the legitimization of North Korea. See, nobody likes the North Korean leader. Nobody recognizes him as a leader. He's not duly elected. He does not have the support of his people. He has fear, and fear is not love. Fear is not respect. The stories that we heard coming out of North Korea, this from the New York Times, June 11th. In North Korea, these crimes entail extermination, murder, enslavement, torture, imprisonment, rape, forced abortions, and other sexual violence. Persecution on political, religious, racial, and gender grounds. The forcible transfer of populations. The enforced disappearance of persons. And the inhumane act of knowingly causing prolonged starvation. This, according to a United Nations report that examined North Korea. And by the way, in the most timely of fashions, which is to say when we met with the North Korean leader, we also decided to pull out of the human rights panel at the United Nations. And our excuse was that the panel really has nothing to do with human rights. And when they start having something to do with human rights, well, then we will go ahead and come back to the table. In North Korea, they've got a network of prison gulags. Quoting here, many North Koreans live in fear. That is by design, and it is reinforced by the country's ruthless police state. People accused of political crimes are arrested and sentenced to prison camps without trials. Wait a minute. Didn't Trump recently suggest that maybe we shouldn't be giving trials to people who come over the border? Quoting again, while their families are often kept in the dark about their whereabouts, up to 120,000 inmates were in the country's four major political prisons in 2014 and were subjected to gruesome conditions. This according to the same United Nations report. Prisoners are starved, forced to work, tortured, and raped. Reproductive rights are denied through forced abortions and infanticide, as in killing babies. I guess we're only jailing babies, so we're not quite there yet. Some are executed, sometimes in public. Hundreds of thousands of political prisoners have died in the camps over the past 50 years. This according to the same United Nations report. In addition to political camps, North Korea also operates prisons for those accused of ordinary crimes. Some prisons are short-term labor camps. Others hold prisoners who face long-term torture, starvation, and other suffering. Since Kim assumed power in 2011, taken over from his father, Kim Jong-il, he has consolidated his power through executions. In the first 6 years as leader, he has ordered the executions of at least 340 people. Or as our president likes to call it, a strong leader. In 2016, Kim Jong-jin, the deputy premier for education, was killed in front of a firing squad after showing a disrespectful posture in a meeting. Hyun Young Chol, a general over the armed forces, fell asleep in a meeting and he was executed with an anti-aircraft gun. And it really does go on from here. And so what happened? What happened when Trump came back from Singapore after the meeting with the North Korean leader? He began immediately lavishing heavy, around-the-clock praise on him. So much love. So in North Korea, they don't have an independent media. They've got media that is approved by the Dear Leader, and that is all that is able to be shown on television. And for years, decades really, it has been what they refer to as anti-Western news, where they would just love on the North Korean leader. Dear Leader, thank you for this day. They don't thank God. They thank the Dear Leader. The people in North Korea believe things about Kim Jong-un that simply cannot be true, such as he may not be human and he's probably not going to die, things like that, that maybe he doesn't go to the bathroom, which is insane because our media reported that Kim Jong-un brought his own toilet to Singapore. And this is true. And he brings it everywhere he goes because when he leaves the country, especially, he doesn't trust anybody or anything. And he shouldn't, because we all hate him. And he brought his own toilet. But they likely don't know that in North Korea because all of the media is controlled by the North Korean leader. Essentially the same thing that Trump would like to do here. An AP analysis post-meeting went like this. Trump retreats from U.S. moral leadership stance. This by Jonathan Lemire and Matthew Pennington over at AP. Beginning in the moments after his summit with Kim Jong-un, President Donald Trump was asked about North Korea's history of human rights horrors. The horrors that we just discussed here. It's rough, he allowed. Then he added, it's rough in a lot of places, by the way, not just there. Trump's verbal shrug in Singapore represented a striking change from the way U.S. presidents have viewed their job. A shift from the nation's asserted stance as the globe's moral leader in favor of an approach based more on trade-offs with adversaries and allies alike. We need only point to a few incidences where Trump sees himself much like the North Korean leader, such as when he decided not to blame neo-Nazis and white supremacists for Charlottesville, suggesting that there was blame on both sides. And when he was asked to condemn the murders carried out under the rule of Vladimir Putin in Russia, Trump retorted, there's a lot of killers. Do you think that our country is so innocent? When asked about him, the North Korean leader, he said, I think he liked me and I like him. And I understand the past and, you know, nobody has to tell me. He's a rough guy, Trump said of Kim to Voice of America at the conclusion of the summit. He has to be a rough guy or he has to be a rough person. But We got along very well. He's smart. He loves his people. He loves his country. Adding to his praise, Trump tweeted on the way back to the U.S., got along great with Kim Jong-un, who wants to see wonderful things for his country. Anyone can make war, but only the most courageous make peace. I'll agree with him there. So this is the United States effectively retreating from our stance, our moral stance in the world, where we used to condemn people that did these kinds of things, that slaughtered their own people, killed their own family members, and fed them to dogs. We used to see that as a bad thing. But everything bad is good now.
I don't think President Trump is thinking about public relations. He's thinking about peace. He's thinking about how we achieve what has eluded successive American administrations. I mean, truthfully, the Clinton administration, even the Bush administration, got played in the past. It would be a great mistake for Kim Jong-un to think he could play Donald Trump.
This from Michael Cruz over at Politico. So, Tony Schwartz. In 1985, Tony Schwartz was a writer for New York Magazine and was sitting in Donald Trump's office in Trump Tower, interviewing him for a story. Trump told him that he had agreed to write a book for Random House. Well, if you get to write a book, Schwartz said, recalling his interaction in a speech he gave last fall at the University of Michigan, then you want to call it The Art of the Deal. See, Tony Schwartz is the ghostwriter of Trump's book. I like that, Trump said. Do you want to write it? Talking about the book. These sorts of arrangements typically are not that generous for a writer, he points out. Most writers for hire receive a flat fee or a selectively modest percentage of any money that the book earns. Schwartz said in the speech, by contrast, that he got from Trump an almost unheard of half of the $500,000 advance from Random House and also half of the royalties. Oh, by the way, it didn't take a lot of haggling. He basically just agreed, Schwartz told me in an email, meaning Schwartz, ever since, has brought in millions of dollars more royalties, and Trump has brought in millions less. See, when you ghostwrite for somebody, as I pointed out, it's usually a flat fee, maybe, just maybe some of the royalties. But Schwartz got more money in the deal. We're frequently told about what a great, great deal maker our current president is. By the way, I'm making an attempt not to say his name anymore. I'm just sick of that word leaving my mouth. It's so gross. Schwartz pointed out, this is pretty golden for me. And he pretty much just gave me whatever I asked for. He's not that great of a deal maker. So, why do people believe that he's such a great deal maker? Well, the answer is quite simple. Because he says it all the time. Me, 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 me. I am a great deal maker. I have the best deals. I have the best ideas. I will hire the best people. And when the exact opposite turns out to be true, he simply points out that that's fake news. That's not real. I am the best. I do make the best deals. Pence, in that clip that I just played, if you think you're going to play Donald Trump, well, you got another thing coming. So did Trump get played? One could say that this is going to play out over months and years, maybe even decades. Maybe we won't know for some time whether our president, our current president in 2018, look at me, whether he really did or did not get played. Did he make us a fantastic deal? Now, by the way, pointing out, it took almost 2 years, I believe, to work out the Iran deal. And it was hundreds of pages long. It's very involved. And we didn't get everything that we wanted, but that deals aren't about just you. That's why you make a deal with somebody else. They get a little, you get a little. You lose a little, they lose a little. Everybody gets something, nobody gets everything. And that's the way these things work. And they're highly detailed. You have ways to check up on them to make sure that they're holding up their end of the deal. You make sure that you get a timeline, so on and so forth. And if at any time anybody breaks the deal, you have a clause in there where you can walk away from it. So, North Korean state television, this according to the Washington Post, aired a 42-minute documentary that offered a different view of Kim Jong-un's meeting with our president in Singapore. Notably, the documentary appears to have captured several scenes that international news organizations missed, including one awkward moment when the American president was saluted by a North Korean military leader. The U.S. president then salutes in return. Our current president, the 45th president of the United States, saluted a North Korean general. Think about that. That in and of itself really ought to be bad enough, but it gets worse. Remember, in North Korea, they don't have news. They don't have real news. They don't have real television shows. They don't even have real music. All the music celebrates the damn country. And you can be executed for watching a Hollywood movie. But this video of our president, our current president, the United States president, it now plays on a constant loop in North Korea, in a lot of their public squares. A constant loop. The American president saluting a North Korean general. And the way that it's being played in North Korea is that they are now the leaders of the world. Now remember, they don't get outside news. It is now being played that Kim Jong-un is the greatest leader in the world. So much so that the American president, our 45th president, look at me really trying here. So much so that the American president salutes North Korean generals.
To the condition of our democracy that our own president uses words infamously spoken by Joseph Stalin to describe his enemies. It bears noting that so fraught with malice was the phrase enemy of the people that even Nikita Khrushchev forbade its use. We are a mature democracy. It is past time to stop excusing or ignoring or worse, endorsing these attacks on the truth. For if we compromise the truth for the sake of our politics, we are lost.
I consume a lot of conservative media, and I've often wondered, I can tell you what my perfect, say, senator or house member or even president, I can tell you what mine would sound like, what they would believe in, the values that they would espouse. But I've often wondered, just listening to Sean Hannity and Alex Jones and Rush Limbaugh and all these dingbats, I've often wondered what their perfect leader would be like. See, I've thought for some time, and I first pointed this out in a song that I wrote back in 2005, so 13 years ago. Back then, I got some guff for it at the time. Some people were like, yeah, maybe you're right, and maybe not, whatever. But I got a lot of guff for it at the time. And I go, I think what they want is a dictator, but a dictator that'll do with what they want. And my example was how just there seemed to be nothing that George Bush could do that was wrong, no matter how awful it was, no matter how many lies he told, he was there for him. Same with Limbaugh and, you know, Rusty Humphries and a lot of these guys I've just listened to for years. I don't listen to Rusty anymore, but I don't even know if he's on any of our stations around here. But I'd catch a lot of the stuff on local radio. I didn't have a lot of access to the internet back then. So I listen to a lot more now because access to the internet, you know, tune in radio. And I said, maybe they want a dictator. Maybe they want a brutal dictator. You know, and I might have even dropped the old H word, Hitler. Maybe they want a guy like that. And when Obama became president, they immediately began pointing out how Hitler-esque they thought that Barack Obama was. Whoa, 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 what? Yeah, they thought Barack Obama was Hitler. And I go, well, huh. Clearly he's not Hitler, but at the very least, you can only assume that they're saying that because they don't like Hitler. That's what I assumed. And comes along this guy, praising Nazis, using a white supremacist phrase, make America great again, refusing to criticize Nazis in America, adopting all of their language, retweeting Nazi propaganda. I go, can this be real? Is this And then I saw the way he treated our allies. Right? There's a special place in hell for Justin Trudeau. What? Yeah. The way he treats all of our allies, Angela Merkel, the way he treats all of our allies, just dumps on him. Why do I gotta go to the G7? Putin ain't gonna be there. Putin should get to be there. Putin? That guy who kills journalists? That guy who kills his own people? That guy who just stole another election? That guy should get to be there? Oh, and by the way, Kim Jong-un is the greatest man alive. Well, not quite. I'm the greatest man alive. I'm not happy that I'm right. It's quite unfortunate. You say, Mel, but what about all those good conservatives out there? And there are some. What about those good conservatives out there that don't particularly like Trump, don't approve of the job he's doing? Ladies and gentlemen, the numbers are in, and they are not good. The number of people that do not approve, who identify as Republicans, the number of people who do not approve of the job that the current president is doing, is very small. It's 90-10. 90% approval. This is their perfect leader. This is the guy that they wanted. This is the guy that they got. He didn't get a majority of the votes, but he didn't have to. There were enough games that were able to be played in 2016 that they were able to get their guy in there even without a majority of the votes. By the way, if you didn't vote, you helped him. You voted for old Jill Stein, you helped him. You just couldn't bring yourself to vote for Hillary. You helped him. He's in there. Partial thanks to you. So the North Korea deal. So what they signed was a thing, non-binding, by the way, with no timeline, one page long. And it effectively said, yeah, we'd like to denuclearize. Does that sound good? All right, good. Yeah, we'd like to denuclearize. We also like each other a lot. It was one page, like double or triple spaced. Really not much. Not at all comprehensive. And there was no negotiation. So what did our deal maker in chief get us? And how long will it take for us to see results? Ladies and gentlemen, you're going to get your results right now. I'll get to my absence in a little bit. But this came out June 27th. I'm taping on June 28th today. The headline, satellite imagery suggests rapid upgrades at North Korea nuclear site, according to the 38 North Monitoring Group. Satellite imagery, this out of Seoul, satellite imagery of North Korean nuclear research suggests that improvements have processed at a rapid pace. A report from a monitoring group said Wednesday that the level of current operations at the facility still remains unclear. But an analysis which closely follows North Korean affairs, this out of Seoul, offered a snapshot of the Yongbyon Nuclear Scientific Research Center on June 21st, 9 days after the North Korean leader signed a declaration to denuclearize after the Singapore summit with the president, with the American president. Despite the lack of conclusive details of Yongbyon's operations, the report raises questions over whether Kim has taken steps to curb North Korea's nuclear program since the summit. It is also likely to bring new concerns from the American administration over how the North interprets the Singapore declaration. The report points to rapid pace. So here's what we know. From satellite imagery, we know that they have accelerated their nuclear program. They're building more and they're building them faster. So what did the North Korean leader get? One, he got a meeting with the American president. It's never happened before. He got legitimization through that meeting. Never happened before. He's been lavished both on television and in written word on Twitter by the American president. Lavished with love and praise, all of which is being turned into North Korean propaganda right now. And he got a summit with the American president. So that's everything that, by the way, one more thing. One of the points of contention that we've had for some time with North Korea are these joint military exercises that we do down on the border. And we do them for military readiness. We do this to help South Korea. It's our way. You may remember, for a while there, the meeting with North Korea was canceled. North Korea was supposed to have a meeting with South Korea, and they canceled it because of these joint exercises. And one of the things that Kim asked for at that meeting was an end to these joint exercises. And without telling his generals, without telling his staff, without telling his own vice president, without telling anybody, he said, yeah, we'll stop. We'll stop having those on the border. So Kim got all of this from our president. And what did we get? We got him to sign this denuclearization deal with no timeline and no verification inside of it. And what have we learned since then? That the North's nuclear program is accelerating faster now than it was before. Oh, my, my, my.
oh, I'll tell them bluntly that you're already being trapped, because inviting Putin, that's exactly what Putin wants. Putin doesn't care about the substance of the conversation. All he wants is a picture with Donald Trump in the White House in Mar-a-Lago anywhere, because that's what we show on Russian television to demonstrate that while Russia is being treated poorly, Vladimir Putin is invincible. Vladimir Putin is the one who can fix everything, and that will give Putin enormous political power to deal with any potential discontent among his allies and henchmen in Russia.
So that's Garry Kasparov appearing on MSNBC. And yeah, Kasparov, the same guy that the chess genius, that guy. And he's pointing out that it's the same thing that Kim Jong-un wanted. He wants the propaganda. He wants pictures. He wants a meeting with the American president. And we have now just learned that our current president has agreed to a meeting with Vladimir Putin. There's going to be a summit between the American president and the Russian president. What is he going to give up? What is 45 going to give up to this guy, this brutal dictator, when he meets him? Well, let's think. What does Putin want? It doesn't matter. The supreme deal maker in chief is going to give him everything and anything that he wants. You can say, Melvin, you almost sound like you're enjoying this. Melvin, are you enjoying this? No. No, I'm not enjoying this, because whether I like it or not, this is still the president of my country. And this is wildly embarrassing. No, I don't like to have to report this stuff. This does not feel awesome. But this is unfortunately the fiction in which we live right now. And it's going to be this way for the foreseeable future. I don't know how far the Mueller investigation has progressed, but holy hell, sir, we need your indictment now more than ever, before we have to legally change the name of our country to the United States of Russia.
Initiate a lawsuit against the Obama administration and President Obama over the use of executive action?
I am.
Can you explain why that is necessary and what you hope to achieve?
You know, the Constitution makes it clear that a president's job is to faithfully execute the laws. In my view, the president has not faithfully executed the laws.
Now, what specific executive action or actions are you planning to challenge in court?
When I make that decision, I'll let you know.
That was John Boehner talking about how he was, when he used to be Speaker of the House, talking about how he was going to sue Barack Obama. What did he want to sue our president over? He wanted to sue him over the ACA, the Affordable Care Act. He wanted to sue him over Obamacare, because he saw it as a forcing it down. It's easy. It's been a long time dream for the United States Republican Party to strip Americans of their health care, of their access to health care, or at the very least, raise prices so high that if you so much as even get a cold, you're going to go into bankruptcy. Because the point is not to make you happy. It is not to make you healthy. It is not the pursuit of happiness or any of that. It's simply to extract as much money from you as they can before you die. Say, Melvin, God, that really sounds cynical. Do you really mean that? They're just excited. How about stripping healthcare from Americans? So recently, the current administration decided to remove the mandate. Now, the mandate is what helps fund the thing. And without the mandate, eventually, it will fall apart. It'll take some time, but it will fall apart because that's taking a lot of the money out of it. And even with that inevitable collapse of Obamacare, it's just not fast enough for this president and his administration. So I give you the headline. The current president sides with Ken Paxton to argue pre-existing conditions are unconstitutional. Quoting here, millions of Texans with pre-existing conditions cannot be denied coverage by insurance companies under protections established in the Affordable Care Act. Now, Attorney General in Texas, General Ken Paxton, wants to throw patients with pre-existing conditions back to the mercy of insurance companies, and the current administration wants to help. In a brief with the Department of Justice, he sided with 20 GOP attorneys led by Paxton to say that pre-existing conditions under the ACA are unconstitutional. This is real. They're suing to say that covering you when you're sick, and it's not just Texas, it's the current administration. They're saying yes to cover your pre-existing conditions, to cover you when if you come to an insurance company and you've been sick before, they'll take your money, but they're not going to help you. Or they're just going to deny you outright. Because saying that they cannot deny you coverage based on your past health is to this administration and the state attorney general of Texas, it's unconstitutional to make insurance companies take sick people. This is real.
Facebook and Twitter are literally using algorithms and human decisions to literally wipe conservative content off of their platforms. Twitter and Facebook are intentionally and purposefully doing this. And it's not going to be long before, and I'm talking just a few short years, there will not be any conservative content that you're going to be able to find on social media. And then it won't be long after that before it becomes criminalized.
So conservatives, and I obviously pulled that from the Rush Limbaugh show, they have this idea that liberals are trying to criminalize conservatism. Blow it out your ass. Honestly, wow. There won't be anywhere conservative. When they say conservative, what they mean is white. Their true concern is white. America may not be led by white people. America may not have a gigantic culture of white supremacy that is recognized by one of our major parties and the country's president. The problem is there's just not enough white culture. The current president is getting to appoint more judges. He's on track to appoint more judges than just about any president in history. So far, he has appointed 45 federal judges, and this does not include the Supreme Court justice seat that he got to fill that was stolen for him. And of those 45 that he has seated, 39 of them are white men. 5 of them are Asian men, and 1 of them is a Latino man, and none of them are black. When they say conservative, what they really mean is white. And those judges are giving him exactly what he wants, exactly what the GOP wants. In a 5-4 decision, we've had a ton of these in the last week. One of them was, of course, the Planned Parenthood decision. See, there's these crisis pregnancy centers all over the place. And what the crisis pregnancy centers are is when you're pregnant and you need help, they advertise that they will help you. Don't go to Planned Parenthood. Go to them. And when you go there, they will have you take a pregnancy test, and then they will give you papers on adoption and all of what they refer to as life-affirming choices. And they will scare the piss out of you to make you carry that child to term. So the case that went before the Supreme Court was to say that they have to post that there is a state-run system nearby that will give them other options, such as abortion, not just the crap that these that these Christian crisis pregnancy centers give them. And these crisis centers, which are run privately, decided to sue so that they wouldn't have to tell people that. They don't want to give people that information. And they won. The crisis pregnancy centers won. So there's going to be a lot of misguided women now, especially in the red states. Another decision that came down, 5-4, made possible by this stolen Supreme Court seat. 5-4 was that the red states, and they've been gunning for this for some time, ever since they overturned the Voting Rights Act, they want to be able to engage in voter caging. For those of you that don't know what that is, what they do is they take the voter rolls and they mail a card to all the houses. And on the card, it says, you got to send it back. You got to send it back if you don't want to be kicked off of the rolls. And it looks like junk mail. And it's designed that way. And most people will just huck it. For those that huck it, when they get to the voting booth on voting day, they will find out that they are not registered. They will be given a provisional ballot, a placebo, which will not be counted. And the voter caging will not be happening in affluent white areas. It will be happening in largely Latino, largely black, or largely elderly areas. And I say elderly because those are the folks that want to protect their Social Security. Voter caging has been illegal for decades. Now, thanks to the Supreme Court, it is now legal. Union busting. Union busting came down this week in a 5-4 decision. It's freeloading. See, in the right to work states, you could be a part of a union and the union has to represent you, but you used to have to pay dues in order to get that representation. What the conservatives went to court for was for people to have that same protection, but to not have to pay for it. Freeloaders. And they won. And the point of that is to bust the unions. Because if the union has to represent everybody, including the people who do not pay, it's asking a lawyer to work for free, then eventually it will collapse. And the point of busting unions is to really bust the wages that we all make. Because that's the real problem. They think that working people, the GOP and the current conservative president, they believe that that working people have too much money and that wealthy people do not have enough. And another SCOTUS seat just opened up. We'll get into that a little bit more next week. I remember having a discussion with a gentleman who was on this program roughly about 2 years ago. I'm not going to say his name. I don't associate with him anymore. But he was one of these hardcore Bernie folks. But he was also quite brilliant. He'd spent time in other countries, namely Europe. And he was a great resource for the show because when Bernie was running for president, I asked, hey, these things that Bernard is talking about, what would those things look like in America? Since he had lived under those conditions in the UK, I brought him on and had him talk about it. And it was a good show. But after that, when it became pretty clear that Bernie wasn't going to win the nomination, I said, hey, I'm voting for Hillary because of the Supreme Court. And initially he talked to me and he said, yeah, I get your whole thing because of the Supreme Court, but you shouldn't vote for her no matter what. He just hated Hillary Clinton. And I said, no, I've got to, because I can't have the GOP nominee, whoever that is, even when it became inevitably who it is now. So I can't have them putting more people on the Supreme Court. And this D-bag disagreed. So eventually, he began attacking me on social media. Anytime he'd read something that the Democrats did that he did not like, he would come after me. It would have nothing to do with me, nothing that I did. But he was so incensed by me saying that I would vote for Hillary Clinton because of the Supreme Court. He kind of got it, but then he didn't understand how I could dare vote for her. And I did. And I voted for her. And the Supreme Court is now looking like it's going to be changed for the next 30 or 40 years. These horrible, horrible decisions, none of which favor us, none of which favor us, are there's going to be more and more of them now, with Kennedy stepping down and somebody being put in his place. For the first time in modern history, we now have a Supreme Court case. They all upset me this past week, but this one upset me the most. I'm not a religious man. I do not have faith in any particular religion, but I believe that it is your right, especially as an American, because it's enshrined in the Constitution. It is your right to believe and to worship how you see fit. It's not my thing, but I believe that you should get to have it. Simple as that. And for the first time ever, the media is calling it a travel ban. It's not a travel ban. It's a Muslim ban. The spirit of it is a Muslim ban. It's 7 Muslim majority countries. And it was said that it was done in the name of national security. The Supreme Court voted in favor of our current president with his Muslim ban. They said it is not outside of his power. Effectively, he can ban Muslims. He can ban an entire religion from coming to America. Yes, he gets to do that. In other cases, they generally look at the statements that everybody has made and make a decision based on what the intent was. But with this, they looked at the statements that he made on Twitter, statements that he made on television, the statements that he made to the media, all of the horribly racist, anti-Muslim things that he said. They took none of those into account. None of them. In a dissent from one of the liberals on the court, she did point out all these horribly, horribly anti-Muslim and racist things that he said. But the 5 conservatives on the Supreme Court looked at none of that. And our Supreme Court has now banned an entire religion enshrined in one of their decisions. And these are the things that we have to look forward to for the next number of years.
If we really want to unpack this, the reason that many folks in Honduras and El Salvador are fleeing the gang violence in Central America is because of American policy that literally created the problem in the first place. And we are basically trying to abdicate our own responsibility in that region in a fiercely gross way. And right now, the ACLU, in fact, has a court case right now with the Trump administration because of incidences of where minors have been demonstrated that they've been raped, are being forced not to have an abortion, even though they're seeking it. So this is really on the feet of the Trump administration, where they're speaking on both sides of his mouth, where he's basically trying to state claims that are not true and continuing to peddle these dog whistle politics. And unfortunately, Ali and Stephanie, if you were to ask me why, is because he has been able to demonstrate that the Republicans in the midterm election are really in big trouble. And the only thing that seems to be holding his base together is when he starts peddling these lies.
Quoting here from a story over at CNN, Manuel Antonio Cano Pacheco came to America as a little boy and had a full life in Des Moines, Iowa. He had acquired DACA status attending high school and had family, 3 siblings and a 1-year-old son, this according to his mother. He was really happy in Iowa. It was the only home that he ever knew. He came here as a little boy. Loved school, loved soccer. On his days off from school, he would work as a mechanic. But of course, with our new president, he was found. And he was found, Manuel was found, without his papers. And he was deported back to Mexico, a country he did not grow up, that he did not grow up in, that he was not familiar with. And as soon as he got to Mexico, it took about a week, and he was murdered. The current president decided that in order to keep his base happy, the best way to do that would be to start rounding up brown people and kicking them out. For the new ones that come, taking their children away from them. And this guy, as a result of the election, see, I say the Supreme Court is the worst thing to me that's happening so far. But to this guy, the moment this guy became president, the 45th president of the United States, that effectively signed Manuel's death warrant. And who knows if he even had the right to vote, if he even had a choice. So to that gentleman, whose name I will not mention, that I had on this show a while back, a couple years ago, who eventually began targeting me because he saw me as the problem because I was willing to vote for Hillary Clinton. If more people would have done what I did, we would not have these anti-American, anti-human decisions that came down from the Supreme Court this weekend. Manuel's not the only one, and of course, Manuel would still be alive. If you're out there listening, son, you can reach me at tfycpo@gmail.com. Tell me how awesome your America is now. Now. How well the Bernie presidency worked out for you now when you decided to vote for Jill Stein instead. The Supreme Court, boy. Just like I said.
You start looking at these cabinet members, Willie. The 30-second commercial, they're going to have to be 60-second commercials or maybe 30-minute infomercials. If you combine what Mulvaney said with what's happening at the EPA, with what's happening across the entire administration, this is a corrupt administration that talked about the president, talked about draining the swamp. This administration is the swamp. You can't find in recent American political history another administration that has been as ethically challenged as this one.
For hire forever. What does that mean? So normally to work at the White House is one of the most prestigious jobs you can get. And it's insanely hard to get the job. So many people want in and cannot get in. But something has happened with the current White House, and I've never heard about this, long as I've been paying attention to politics. A couple weeks ago, they had a job fair. Whoa, 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 wait a minute. Only the best people, right? No, no, no. They can't get anybody that wants to work at the White House, and anybody that does decide to work at the White House is dirtied. They got schmutz all over there, and nobody's going to want to hire them ever again. Realizing the funk that will be spread all over their body and all over their resume if they decide to work for this president, they've got hundreds of unfilled positions in the current administration because nobody wants to work for this guy. So how did things go at the job fair? Yeah, the vast majority of those jobs are still effing empty. Are you sick of winning yet, folks?
It looks so bad. And basically, you've got Donald Trump acting like a two-bit criminal here and saying to witnesses like Priebus, hey, what did you say? You know, were you nice to me? And so on. That is horrible. You know, I'm a defense lawyer. I love a challenge. You know, I represented bin Laden's driver. And let me tell you, bin Laden's driver acted with far more integrity at every stage in the investigation than Donald Trump has so far. And this is just the published report of what we know.
I have no idea why nobody wants to work for that guy. He seems so stand-up. I come to the mic not to break your heart, not to depress you, not to make you sad, just to bring you the current state of the way things are. Because I'm having a little bit of trouble believing that even with as bad as things are, that anybody's going to turn out. I think that the current president is an overwhelming accurate reflection of America itself. He, 45, is a mirror held up to the country. It's ugly and it's orange, but it's the truth. I'll wrap this show up in a minute.
Hey, Melvin, what's up?
So you may have noticed that I've not been on the mic for the past couple of weeks. I want to give you an update on that stuff, housekeeping stuff. I probably should have done it at the beginning of the show, but I've decided to put it off until now. So what has been going on? In recent weeks, I've talked about this business a few times on the mic here, and my business has grown fairly exponentially. I'm really on the cusp of what I see as being able to quit my job. But of course, because of the health care decisions that have been recently made by the current president, it's not likely I'm going to be able to quit my job anytime soon because I'm a 40-year-old man and I need my damn health care. So with that, I'm working effectively two, maybe three full-time jobs. And that's before I even do any work on the show here. So I took the last couple of weeks off. This show that I prepared, that I performed today, I actually planned out a couple of weeks ago, but was unable to do it until now. So I decided to still do it, but do it with some updates. And so what's going to happen now? I talked about this show is going to go until 300, no matter what it takes. Okay, I want to get at least to that point. And the show's not going to evaporate at that point. But I likely will only come back for special episodes then. But over the summer, last year I was able to keep it up over the summer. The year before I was able to keep it up over the summer. But I've got two, three, and every so often a week where I've got four events. And they're not all just weddings, birthday parties, graduation, all kinds of stuff. It's nuts, but it's good. Things are going really good. I mean, because you have this, first of all, doing stuff that I love. I love the show and I love being a DJ. And, when you make money, obviously it gives you a lot of financial freedom. And it feels good. It feels very comfortable. But to do something you love, to get paid off of that, to get paid off of art. I've talked about on the show how hard it is to make money on art. How you can't make it your primary job, or you almost never can make it your primary job. I've gotten to a point where this thing I said that I probably unlikely to be able to ever do, I'm doing now. And so it's pretty effing amazing. So my priority, it used to be the full-time job, the show, and then DJing. Right, that was sort of the priority order. But the way things have gone now is it's obviously the primary job, which I am spending less and less time at all the time. And then DJing's almost moved in the first place, which means the show, unfortunately, much as I love it, has moved into last place. And I've gotten to a point where I've finally run out of free time. So I'm not able to put it out every week. It may not be until the fall, probably October, until I get back to a regular weekly schedule. So these shows are going to be awfully sporadic. There is something I could have done. And I'm embarrassed to admit this, but there is something that I could have done to still put out the shows. You know, I would have slept less. I would have gotten my daughter's help assembling the shows, something so that I can keep up my schedule. But rather than doing that, I decided to sort of throw my hands up and say, I just can't do it as often as I would like right now. So why didn't I just stay awake more? Why didn't I just try to cram more hours into the day and just keep the show going? And the answer is simple. It appears to me that a lot of folks don't care. Look, if I were Alex Jones, I would be a millionaire by now. If I were willing to get on this mic and lie, make things up, and defend the murder of first graders, I'd be a millionaire now. To get on the mic, to say things that are true, to say things that are verifiable, in today's society, there's not just no profit in it, there's very little interest in it. And the more and more I look at our current president, I'll keep fighting, but I keep asking myself, why am I fighting and fighting so hard when it's pretty damn clear that this is America? This right here, this guy in the White House, this guy that endorsed a pedophile for a Senate seat, this guy that bragged about sexually assaulting women, this guy that's on his like third or fourth wife, this guy who said he wanted to date his own daughter, this guy is an accurate reflection of America. When we hold a mirror up to ourselves, up to our country, the reflection that comes back at us is that guy. He's what America looks like. And so I, even though I like to think that I'm in the majority, I'm starting to believe more and more that I'm really in the minority. And this hill that that I'm climbing, that I'm fighting to get to the front, to bring you these stories, it's become a lot harder because I'm more and more convinced every day that this is the guy that America wants. This is the country that America wants to be. Losing respect around the world, fine. Praising dictators, fine. Americans are okay with that. I hear a lot about the blue wave. The blue wave is coming in the fall, the blue wave. And I would love to believe that the blue wave is coming. But I also thought people were going to turn out and vote for a woman. And I turned out to be wrong. Yeah, she won a popular vote, but it doesn't matter because that's not how these things are calculated. And the blue wave, much as I want it, much as I'd like to see it this fall, I'm not counting on it being there. Because right now, we have got voter caging. You know, we've overturned the Voting Rights Act. You know, and we've got all these things still going on that's going to keep minorities away from the polls. And it seems like there's nothing too horrible that people wouldn't still turn out for this guy. And so I'm not fighting quite like I used to, because I'm starting to feel like I'm one of the few, the very, very few, that are not okay with this. And if I wake up in November, the first Wednesday in November, and the House and Senate are still controlled by the GOP, I'm setting myself up to not be surprised right now. Yep, people didn't care enough to turn out. And that's just the way it is. They didn't turn out in 2016. Don't turn out in 2018. Maybe I'm dead wrong. And that'd be nice. That'd be a very nice surprise. But I'm just realizing the more and more these things happen, the very little action that I'm seeing. And I don't believe that people are going to turn out to vote. And the more and more I see that, it just makes me think that, hey, not necessarily that I'm defeated, but I'm almost there. Because nobody seems to care. And that's unfortunate. Prove me wrong, folks. Prove me wrong. Show me that I am not the only person feels this way in America. Show me that most of my fellow Americans are not disgusting effing pigs. Show me. Love to see you. Show me. Because I feel like this country is just going to get a little more orange post-November. Few more Confederate flags, few more swastikas, but still the same old America it was the November before that and the November before that. Prove me wrong, folks. Prove me wrong. Thank you for being here on The Fire You Camp It Out. Our official home is tfycpo.podbean.com. Like us, facebook.com/TFYCPO. Listen on the go. Just download the Podbean app at the iTunes Store or at the Google Play Store for Android users. Individual episodes are available for download at the iTunes Store or on Podbean. Just search for The Fire You Can't Put Out. There you can also subscribe so that you never miss an episode. Questions, comments, hate mail, just a general statement or inquiry. You can email us at TFYCPO@gmail.com. We work hard, I swear it, on this show, not only to inform but to entertain, and also to keep an open dialogue with our growing listener base. So feel free to reach out to us. And as always, thank you for listening. We are the fire you can't put out, and we will prevail, rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Gavin for producing, and thank you for listening. This is Melvin, signing off. Now that I've woken you up, good morning.